Hello, and you are listening to the first ever podcast by Wildcard Kitty, and it's called Trash Cover. It's a sister podcast to my internet radio show that I started on SubCity Radio in Glasgow at the end of 2013. I'm about to reach my mammoth 14th episode of that. That broadcasts every 2 weeks. And I also get to play lots of music. The concept of trashcore is very, very simple. It's everything with a little bit of trash at its core. Girls, grind and gore. I really like watching B-movies. I love horror films, especially the good quality ones. But I also love a lot of 80s films as well. My radio show, I play a lot of 80s music. And hair metal, and all things maybe slightly dodgy around the edges. I've got a healthy interest in burlesque and cabaret and science fiction. And throughout the course of my shows, I tend to talk about everything and anything from horror movies, B-movies, fairy tales, burlesque, strippers, science fiction, television shows, books, conventions, festivals, you name it, anything similar. And comic books as well, of course, anything a little bit counterculture. So if you like any of those things, I would recommend that you listen to my radio show, but also keep listening to my little podcasts. I was originally going to go for one an alternating weeks to my radio show, but I think what might be kind of fun is if I do little half-hour blasts every week, and we'll see how we get on with that. Yeah, so first up, this episode, and I've been saving this, I'm a little bit late in the day because I actually was lucky enough to see the film Oculus, thanks to the wonderful company Fangoria. I don't know if any horror fans may have heard of them, but they allowed the film Oculus, because they helped distribute that film, to premiere at the Dead by Dawn Horror Film Festival, which happens once a year in the city of Edinburgh. Which I was in attendance at, and it was the closing film of the weekend, and that was around the end of April, around sort of the 23rd to the 25th of April-ish. And it was around 6 or 7 weeks ago, and I was just getting round now to working out the podcast 2 days before the film Oculus is actually released. So hopefully, if you're deciding what to go and see this weekend, my review, don't worry, there will be no spoilers, will help you out in that. I'm going to tease you a little bit though, because I'm going to talk about his first film. This is Mike Flanagan, the director of Oculus. I'm going to talk about his first film, Absentia, which I decided to watch after having seen Oculus and deciding to talk about it before. I thought it'd be a nice little sandwich episode. We could talk about both his major feature films recently. So Absentia came out in 2011 and won like a whole host of awards at various film festivals. The tagline for Absentia is "There are fates worse than death." And having watched the film, I have to say this is true. Again, if you've not seen it yet, don't worry, I'm not gonna spoil it. There's nothing worse than a wee spoiler. I'm just gonna kind of talk a bit more about sort of the directing style and the atmosphere and things. Having seen Oculus, I would have to say that this is really quite a slow burner of a film. It starts off, and what's really nice as well, actually, I was waxing lyrical about the Bechdel test, which is obviously it's a little film test that was devised by, it was basically started in a sort of feminist cartoon a few years back, I think 20 years ago or so, and it's basically a sort of media test to do with films, and if you pass the Bechdel test if you have two female characters, I think they have to be named as well, having a conversation with each other and not talking about men. So yeah, basically two women have to talk to each other and not about a man. And interestingly enough, I think it was only 3-10% films actually passed that test. And horror actually is quite a good one, because they quite often have obviously the heroines as females, the sort of the central characters are females, and so they're obviously talking about their impending death as opposed to talking about men. I think the more cynical an audience might suggest that impending death and men could possibly be the same thing, but in this instance, no. So basically the concept of the Sepsentia is very simple. So a woman and her sister begin to link a mysterious tunnel to a series of disappearances, including that of her own husband. That's a line from IMDb, which for those of you who already know me, know it's my bestest friend in the whole wide world when it comes to watching films and things. I love looking at actors and recognising people and then having a wee scout around and seeing what else they've been in. The film Absentia was written and directed by Mike Flanagan and stars Katie Parker as Callie, Courtney Bell as Trisha, and Dave Levine as Detective Ryan Mallory. Now there are some other characters in that, but these are essentially the central characters within that. And yeah, Katie Parker as Callie is the she's the wayward sister that returns home and to be with her very, very pregnant sister. Basically, she did a bit of a sort of heroin addiction things and has come home. She's cleaned herself up, she's gone travelling, and she comes back to support her sister, Trisha, played by Courtney Bell. Trisha is heavily pregnant, and we kind of find out a bit more about that later. But basically, her husband has disappeared 7 months earlier. That's where the title comes from. In absentia is basically when someone's declared missing, but they cannot legally be declared dead until they've been missing for at least 7 years. So obviously this is a very difficult time for her, because she still loves her husband, but I mean, she's never had the closure of knowing what happened. And you know, they do a little bit of catching up, and they discuss different scenarios, and Trisha suggests that she likes to think that perhaps, you know, different things, like maybe he actually secretly worked for the CIA and something came up and he had to leave, and you know, maybe he watches over the house, and but because of his job he was never able to, you know, tell her he'd had to leave because she'd be put in danger otherwise, or had a secret life and he's met somebody else and he just ran away and they were very, very happy and things, rather than thinking about all the possibility of the bad things that might have happened. And as it kind of progresses, it's almost like it's got that Japanese film feel where almost nothing kind of happens initially. And it's, you know, it's more about sort of building the characters up. It's a really slow burner. They both have got sort of practicing interest in religion. Callie's found Christianity, so she's trying to be like a good person. And that's part of her reform and staying clean, and whereas Trisha is more of a Buddhist, with a little bowl and meditating and things in her room. And in the meantime, she's got a very strong friendship with Detective Ryan Mallory, played by Dave Levine, who's been trying to investigate the husband's death, and as a result the two of them have become very, very close, and he has fallen in love with Trisha and has been trying to convince her to go out with him for quite some time. But of course, things never run smoothly in the course of love in a horror film, do they? So well, obviously he's trying to get together with her while there's other complications to the day. She is trying to deal with the fact that she's had to sign the papers and come to terms with the fact that the man she loves has just disappeared, and some mysterious things start to happen. She starts seeing him around the flat, and she goes to see the psychiatrist, and he's saying it's probably just your mind playing tricks on you and some sort of reaction. And in the meantime, her sister Callie, however, who's going out running to get the happy endorphins going to sort of stop the addiction and things, and they run through this little tunnel that goes under. It cuts through a sort of a hilly bank, and she comes across what looks like a derelict, tunnel. It looks like there's a sort of a
grubby looking homeless person, shall we say, or sort of like for like addicted person, because he's like filthy, covered in blood, looks like he's been abused, and he's very, very thin and pale, and he's very, very confused, and he reveals that his name is Walter Lambert. And she's sort of saying, Bruno, we said, oh no, I kind of can't help you, but I will come back and bring you some food. And as she does so, somebody who's suspiciously carrying around a bag of things into the tunnel sort of, you know, says, you shouldn't leave that there, you shouldn't leave that there. You know, you shouldn't leave that there. I think it's a trade. And she's just very, very confused by the whole thing. And she goes back the next day and the food is gone. So she didn't really think anything more of it until a strange looking necklace appears on her doorstep. And by all accounts and purposes, some kind of trade has been made, but with what? And that's basically around the point it all starts to go pear-shaped. Now, this is one of those films that, as I said, it's a slow burner. It's very much about the atmosphere, and it's the anticipation of things happening in it. And I don't think I'm really going to spoil it, but obviously, you know, the tunnel, there's something wrong with the tunnel. And what's very, very interesting about that is that it kind of links itself to a children's story. And it's sort of like tapped upon at certain points, because Callie begins to suspect that, you know, something's seriously wrong, and she does a little bit of research and finds out that, you know, lots of other people have disappeared over the years and it's never really fully been explained. And it kind of touches upon the aspect of the Three Billy Goats Gruff, which is kind of interesting. You know, I like my fairy tales. And Three Billy Goats Gruff is actually a Norwegian fairy tale. Tre Boken Bruse. Hopefully I pronounced that right. I did a little bit of Swedish when I was living there for 3 months, but that's another story. And the fairy tale was collected by Peter Christian Asbjörnsson and Jörgen Moe in the Norske Folkeventyr, which is first published between 1841 and 1844, and it has an Eat Me When I'm Fatter plot, which is kind of interesting. I will read a little bit of the Three Billy Goats Gruff for you, for those of you who are unfamiliar with this little fairy tale. And so it's kind of referenced quite a lot, but it's quite interesting because obviously it's got that troll aspect, and that did make me think of the film Troll Hunter. It's kind of this interesting, like, Scandinavia's got this very sort of interesting links to the mountains and the ground and the bridges and the earth, and the idea that there are sort of creatures living there and you've got to pay penance, and, you know, trolls kind of sniff out human blood and things like that, and you kind of and obviously trading with something that lives under a bridge is probably a bad plan. There are other links as well, that, you know, kind of, you get into that whole sort of slightly unknown territory, like the Wendigo and the, you know, like Slenderman territory with this. And I just got a wee shiver. I'm recording this at 1:20 at night. It's as dark as it's going to get outside in June. I just got a wee shiver. I'm like, oh my god, talking about the Slenderman in the middle of the night, it's terrifying. Anyway, let's concentrate on the fairy tale, shall we? Yeah. So once upon a time, there were three Billy Goats Gruff, and they set off to the hills where the sweet grass grew. There they would eat and eat until they were fat. On the way was a bridge over a stream, and under this bridge there lived a troll. His eyes were round as saucers, and his nose was long as a poker. First of all came the youngest Billy Goat Gruff to cross the bridge. Trip, trap, trip, trap, trip, trap, went the bridge. Who's that tripping over my bridge? Roared the troll. Oh, it's only me, the littlest Billy Goat Gruff. And I'm going to the hills to make myself fat, said the littlest Billy Goat Gruff in such a tiny voice. Now I'm going to gobble you up, said the troll. Oh no, please don't take me. I'm far too little, said the billy goat. Wait until the second billy goat comes. He's much bigger. Very well, be off with you, said the troll. Trip, trap, trip, trap, trip, trap, went the bridge. Who is that tripping over my bridge? roared the troll. Oh, it's only the second Billy Goat Gruff, and I'm going off to the hills to make myself fat, said the second Billy Goat Gruff, who hadn't such a small voice.
No, I'm going to gobble you up, said the troll.
Oh, no, please don't do that. Wait until the big Billy Goat comes. He's much bigger.
Very well. Be off with you, said the troll.
Just then, along came the big Billy Goat Gruff.
Trip, trap, trip, trap, trip, trap, went the bridge.
For the big Billy Goat was so heavy that the bridge groaned and creaked beneath him.
Who is that tripping over my bridge? Roared the troll.
It's me, the big Billy Goat Gruff, said the Billy Goat,
who had a great hoarse voice of his own.
Now I'm going to gobble you up, roared the troll.
Well, come along, I'm ready for you, said the big Billy Goat Gruff.
Up climbed the troll, and the big Billy Goat Gruff put down his horns and tossed the troll off the bridge into the stream. Splash! Then the big Billy Goat Gruff crossed the bridge and went up to the hills. There the three Billy Goats Gruff got so fat that they were barely able to waddle home again. And if the fat hasn't fallen off them, why, they're still fat. And so, snip, snip, snap, snout, this tale's told out. Interesting. What I did quite like about reading that, obviously I love doing the voices, as you can tell, is that it kind of deals with the idea of trading and things. It's really inspirational. In the course of my podcast, I am definitely going to be trying to talk to as many filmmakers as I possibly can, or people who've written books and things. So I will be trying to get hold of Mike Flanagan at a later point, but I figured trying to figure out how to podcast in this particular interest, and then maybe doing a follow-up Q&A would be much more exciting. What do you think? Yeah. Once I work out to use Skype properly to interview as well. I know, skills, so many skills. But yeah, it kind of introduces the idea of trading within that, whereas the goats are actually trading. Oh, no, you don't want me. Someone bigger and better is coming along, it'll be tastier. I'm just skin and bones, me. And the troll kind of goes, yeah, okay, we'll kind of deal with that. It talks about kind of fattening him up and things. But yeah, absentia kind of deals with disappearances and sort of possible explanations, as it were, because obviously it's the actual people do disappear and it's kind of unexplained, and the idea of maybe there's a little bit more going on, there are actually sort of creatures that sort of take people and sort of trade and things like that. Yeah, it escalates and it kind of builds up, and yeah, it's got that sort of slow creeping sensation. It was done on a very small budget. I would say it also stars as Doug Jones is the sort of the derelict man that she finds in the hallway, and I thought it was the Doug Jones who was the stunt guy that worked on the Star Wars movies, but it turns out he's been in actually a lot of other things instead. For example, he was one of the grey gentlemen in Buffy the Vampire Slayer in the Hush episode, and he was in Jack Frost 2, Revenge of the Mutant Killer Snowman. Amazing. I've previously reviewed Jack Frost, so you know how amazing I find that kind of crap. And he was also Abe Sapien in Hellboy. And where are we? The Fauno and in Pan's Labyrinth, which is quite exciting. He was back in Hellboy 2, same guy. And I've been in quite a lot of other science fiction items. He's Cushies in Falling Skies, the television series, which is pretty cool, up until sort of recently. And apparently Hellboy 3 is coming out soon. It's rumoured, announced, that's quite exciting. So that's a little bit of an exclusive there for you. Thanks to IMDb, Hellboy 3 is possibly in the making. Nice. But yeah, the film was made on a very limited budget, thanks to the wonder of Kickstarter crowdfunding. And Yeah, they originally had a target set of, I think it was $15,000. And they actually managed to raise $25,000, which was a third of the actual budget. It was basically made for a budget of $70,000, which is pretty decent, quite frankly. And it was filmed mostly in California. Now, one of the interesting facts that I actually spotted and was quite excited about, but it's nice to have it confirmed in writing for you, is that when Trisha is a psychiatrist, there is a little mirror in the psychiatrist's office. And it is, of course, the mirror that was used in the original version of Oculus. For those of you that don't know, Oculus was originally a short that was made in 2006, but it was actually kind of screened in 2009. We'll get to the point of that in just a moment. But yeah, the mirror hanging in the wall is a mirror from a short film Oculus, Chapter 3, The Man with the Plan. And the guy playing the psychiatrist in that particular scene with her is Scott Graham, who plays Tim Russell, who is the main actor and character in Oculus Chapter 3, The Man with the Plan. Now, this was originally made in 2006 and is 32 minutes long. Yeah, because by definition, a film is classed as a short if it is longer than 40 minutes. Ideally, you want, if you're making a short film, you want to make it sort of anywhere up to about 20 minutes. Longer than that, it becomes very difficult to have it put into film categories and find spaces to screen them. In this particular instance, this was shown at the aforementioned Dead by Dawn Festival in 2009. I wasn't in attendance at that particular one, and I'm kind of gutted. And it was apparently available for a certain amount of time on the internet. You could actually go to Mike Flanagan's website and you could view it there. It has been removed because he plans to release it, the DVD and Blu-ray versions of Oculus, the feature-length movie, when that gets released. So yeah, that's kind of, you know, held back. So there is the opportunity to get to see that at a later point. But yeah, the little mirror is... in this particular film, apparently looks like it is made of wood, but is in fact made of hard plastic, which is kind of interesting. And the tagline from this particular one is, no one knows who created it, no one knows what possesses it, but Tim Russell knows what it can do, and he's going to prove it. So this film, again, was filmed in the USA. And the storyline for this is, it's not dissimilar to the new one, but we'll talk about the differences in a minute. Years ago, Tim Russell's father committed a horrible atrocity. It was always Tim's contention that a large ornate mirror his father possessed was the cause of this terrible accident and event. Now, after years of research, Tim has traced the bloody trail of destruction that treads in the wake of this dark and forbidden mirror. With a history of over 300 years of mysterious circumstance, Tim intends to capture these horrors on tape and reveal the true nature of evil that lies within. Now, as you know from the title that I've just mentioned, it's called Oculus Chapter 3, The Man with the Plan, suggesting that there were other episodes. In fact, apparently Mike Flanagan had planned it to be one of 9 parts that he was writing at the time. Which is kind of interesting, but giving the mirror around 300 years of history allows for that possibility to happen. And now this just featured the one boy, and the difference we're going to move on to is Oculus, the 2013 version. Again, of course, directed and written by Mike Flanagan, and stars Karen Gillan, she of red hair, Scottish, no, I don't know her, and you know, not all Scots know each other, but I probably know someone who knows someone who knows her. She of Doctor Who fame, and Katie Sackhoff, and Rory Cochrane, and Brendan Thwaites. So, Karen Gillan and Brenton Thwaites play Kaylee Russell and Tim Russell, and their parents, Katie Sackhoff and Rory Cochran, Marie and Alan Russell. Now, the more astute of you amongst you will have realised that those actors are all roughly around the same age. It would be impossible for Katie Sackhoff to play Karen Gillan's mother. She's just not old enough. And that's correct. What happens is the story is told partly in flashback sequence as well as in the present. Now, this is, again, no spoilers, don't worry about it. It's an incredible device used. It has been done many times before, obviously, but this device is used excellently in this film. The actual film, it starts off with Tim Russell being released from a psychiatric home. Karen Gillan, Kaylee Russell, who works in an auction house and has a lovely fiancé that owns the auction house, having acquired this large creepy mirror that she's very intense about, and someone's purchased it, but it gets to stay in the auction house for a week. And that coincides with them going back to the house that their parents used to live in with them, where their parents were sort of both, I won't say murdered, but basically their father went mad and killed the mother and killed himself. The son had to, Tim Russell had to kill the father. And that's the setup for what happens. Yeah, a woman tries to exonerate her brother who's convicted of murder, i.e. like her father, by proving that the crime was committed by a supernatural phenomenon. So, yeah, basically that's the setup. And the story unfolds where this large ornate mirror has been purchased by the father and hangs in his office, and it changes his behaviour, or at least it appears to change his behaviour. That's the perception of it. And years later, once he's old enough and having been, you know, believed, you know, as a small boy who shot his father, they claimed that the father was obviously trying to kill them. But there's no way of proving that because they're little kids. Although despite the fact that he kind of did go a bit mad and kind of tortured and killed their mother. And Kaylee is now on a mission to prove that it was in fact the mirror, and she's bought a lot of camera equipment and they're going to film the goings on, because as you know previously, the mirror messes with your mind and cannot be trusted. So this is what the flashback sequences are used for. They're in this large house that's essentially almost entirely empty of furniture, and Kaylee has gone to incredible lengths to deal with what is essentially a supernatural phenomenon, with those sort of storm lights, backup bulbs for all the lights, because obviously the first thing it does is draws power out of the house, and then it starts affecting your mind as its sphere of influence grows, because it sort of drains energy from you. And she really has rigged a spectacular setup in this room where the mirror has been placed, and she's done a massive amount of research on it. She's traced it as far back as she could, and all the mysterious murders and deaths that have occurred in the wake of this incredible mirror. And it's massive. It's about 6 foot tall, with this massive thick black ornate sort of carved frame around it, and I believe it's said to have Bavarian roots. Like it's found in Bavaria, but there's no real dating of it. They don't really know the origins. They don't know who carved it. It's just this mysterious mirror that's rather beautiful, but obviously pure evil. Or is it? And it's beautifully edited with the flashback sequences, so it generally keeps you as a viewer completely off guard. For me, I think it was an outstanding film. It's one of the best horror films I've seen in a long time, mainly because it was shit your pants scary. I mean, I've genuinely not been that terrified by a horror film in quite some time. I think the only other films I can kind of liken it to are like The Ring, or when you first saw the Blair Witch Project come out, just that horrible creeping sensation that you get when you, it's like, you know, there's an inevitability and there's that sort of like creeping sensation up your spine. It builds slowly at that point, and like absentia but ramped up a thousandfold. It's very slickly shot, and I seem to remember lovely tones, like Karen Gillan's wearing a lot of like emerald tones, and the parents are sort of like, you know, the mother's in lovely light powdery blues and things, and the actual sort of, it's very lush, like, so kind of the way it's been filmed. The acting is fantastic and the storyline is brilliant. I can only liken that kind of off guard. You don't know if perhaps maybe one of them is a bit mental, or perhaps is the mirror messing with them. Something like Candyman, which was also showing at the Dead by Dawn Horror Festival. But for me, every time I'd watched it, I just took it as read Candyman was real and it appeared. It never even occurred to me that the possibility that Veronica had a psychic break in it, was it Veronica? It was like played by Virginia, Helen, played by Virginia Madsen, had a little bit of a psychiatric break when she found out her husband was cheating on her, and basically using, under the guise of Candyman, went about kind of killing loads of people. Same with Lost Highway, is that kind of like What's Going On Here by David Lynch. It's one of my favourite David Lynch films because I don't really know what's going on. Every time I watch it, I'm going, I still don't know. I still don't quite understand who's who, what's what, what's going on kind of thing. Is it a split personality? What's going on? There's definitely an element to that of Oculus, because I mean, I watch things, I go, right, I take it as read, like the mirror is obviously evil, and you don't actually see like the creatures or the ghosts that are living in the mirror. You see a flash at the beginning and you see nothing until the end, closer to the end. And when you finally do, it's almost a relief, because it takes down the fear and the tension that you build in your own mind. For me, it was definitely, and I think that really is saying something when you've managed to build such an atmosphere and to keep your audience off balance so much that when, you know, there is the reveal, normally that's the horror, you kind of go, oh, thank God, that's actually slightly less terrifying than I'd been imagining up until that point. You know, it was like I kind of couldn't cope. I mean, I admit I've been in the cinema since, you know, the Friday afternoon, and essentially just watched hours and hours and hours of horror. I'd had a couple of drinks, a couple of glasses of wine. So you had a couple of glasses of wine, you're watching a hell of a lot of film, you're dehydrated, you've had very little sleep, so there's like adrenaline, there's the fear from the adrenaline, you're slightly overly tired, your brain's trying to process all the information from things that have been on previously, a little bit drunk, a little bit edgy, a lot of sugar to kind of, and caffeine to kind of counteract the wine and the sleepiness. So you're kind of buzzing anyway. But yeah, utterly terrifying. I couldn't stand in the cinema at the moment. Like, yeah, I'm going to need a minute. I was lucky because we were close to the end of the aisle, but sort of in the middle, so most people were able to go the other way. But I was just like, I actually can't stand right now. I'm gripping the seat in the cinema. I'm going to need a minute to kind of, just to breathe, which I did. My friend whom I was with found it kind of hilarious. Like, you serious? I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna have to let the credits roll on this one. And and so she said, I had a couple of wee drams of whiskey in the bar, because I was like, need to let that one play out kind of thing. Because the ending really is like, it's like, you know, when you kind of watch Game of Thrones and your jaw drops and you're just left devastated, like, what the fuck? That's the ending with this one. Interestingly, a lot of people haven't scored it quite so highly on IMDb. Absentia got like 5.8, whereas this one's coming in at a massive 6.7. I say they're wrong. I really, really liked it, and it's definitely one of the strongest films that I've seen. Maybe seeing it again in the light of day. But overall, the opinion in the cinema was that it was just an incredible film. It was extremely well shot. It was extremely well acted. It was extremely well written and directed and edited as well. Like, it was edited really well. I think that kind of came across the most with, like, the flashback sequences, because sometimes they've been done and it's really, really clunky. But as I've mentioned, this was extremely strong. Editors don't often get enough kudos for their hard work. I think I will just do a quick name check for that just now, just to kind of, you know, get on with that. Can't really fault it. There is that whole kind of, why would you go back? You know, why would you go back? Why would you not just destroy the mirror? Well, that's it. The mirror won't let you destroy it. You try, but you can't. Why not leave it? Why not just draw a line under it and walk away, or bury the mirror or something, you know? But the problem at this point is that it's an expensive antique that has been sold off, and Karen Gillan, Kaylee, she doesn't actually own the mirror. She's basically borrowed it from the auction house without permission, and has decided to, you know, to destroy it, to get proof, and has an attempt to kind of actually destroy it. The film actually was edited by Mike Flanagan as well, which says a lot. I think if you have creative control entirely over a project, but absolutely worth it. Really, really good work. Possibly not as revealing as you might want, but I don't really want to give too much away about it. I just remember, you know, the colours and things, and it stuck in my mind, and it's ingrained. I don't really want to watch it again. You kind of wonder how they go about filming these things, you know, going, oh, it's not really that scary while we're kind of filming it, but it really is. There's some sort of horrific content in there with the imagery and the inevitability. I always think that's the thing that draws you in the most with suspense films. That's why, whilst Aliens is a great film, because, yeah, there are more aliens and we're killing them all, Alien, for me, terrifying. Way scarier, much scarier than Aliens, because it's the inevitability. Yeah, it might be a ballet dancer and a sort of, you know, latex suit and giant alien head. You can kind of see that a wee bit. It's not, special effects aren't quite what they were 8 years later, but the suspense in that, it just draws it out, and it's the inevitability that, you know, this is going to get this alien. Don't go into the ventilation shaft. The alien is going to get you. And sure enough, so it's that, the horror of the inevitable. So I think if that's the kind of horror film that you enjoy, then this is definitely for you. This was made on a budget of £5 million. It opened up in the USA on the 11th of April, and it opens up on the 13th of June in the UK. That's pretty much all I have to say about that. I thought it was fantastic. And I don't really do stars, I don't believe in the star rating, I just believe in reviewing. But yeah, it's definitely up there on that sort of, you know, top, towards the sort of like 9 or 10 out of 10 kind of thing. Fantastic. Go and see. Now, I'm recording this on my phone, so we're going to kind of see what's going on. See what the chat is with my phone. Now, can I see how long I've actually been recording for? Ooh, 40 minutes. I think we'll leave that there. If you've enjoyed my show, please subscribe. And feel free to follow me on Twitter at Trashcore Show. That's right. Thank you very much for listening. I am going to release another little podcast, and that features an interview with Kayla Janice, who was also at the Dead by Dawn Film Festival and has a book coming out called Kid Power, which is about horror films and educational and safety films and kids' TV programming. Awkward. Anyway, thanks for listening. And yeah, send me a tweet. Oh, and like me on Facebook, there's that as well. It's under TV shows, but yeah, just Trashcore. Yeah, I've been Wildcard Kitty. Thanks for listening. I'll speak again soon. Bye.